This is the Paula Gordon Show, conversations with people at the leading edge, of whom Haynes Johnson certainly is at the forefront. Bill Russell, I interrupted you as you were about to go
There's the flow of history, and then there are individual specific events. People do things or they don't do some things. And you tell a story about Eisenhower on a campaign swing in Wisconsin with a speech.
Yeah.
That he did not get, or he did not, he excised a paragraph from it because, as you say, he was the ultimate organization man.
That's right.
And
which
in some ways,
which is usually said of people in the 50s as the organization man.
And
exactly.
In some ways, that, you know, that, we don't know, it's an alternate history, but had he given that speech, things might have been different.
Absolutely. Well, that's one of those moments when you, so the door of history opens, you take one path, or you go through it, or you step back.
And it matters.
He stepped back. This is, to put it in context, this is during the 1950 presidential campaign. Eisenhower is the candidate of the Republican Party. He's clearly going for a victory. He was had this unexcelled reputation in the country. People worshipped him, loved him, so forth. He's on a campaign swing through Wisconsin. Joe McCarthy, the senator from Wisconsin, is on the train with all the Wisconsin apparat and his own Ike's own advisors at the time. McCarthy, he had attacked George Marshall, whom Eisenhower revered, who was responsible for Eisenhower being the general in command, which led him to the presidency of armed forces in Europe. And so the Eisenhower's staff and Eisenhower agreed they were going to use this event with McCarthy to give a speech in Milwaukee. Crowd full of chanting McCarthyites, and he was going to deliver a speech attacking McCarthyism and defending George Marshall and so forth. And it was a very good, strong statement.
Unambiguous.
Yeah, absolutely. And it would have been, it was designed to show Ike this is what he stood for. They get on this plane, the train, and they're going through, and all the leaders say, General, you can't do this because, after all, Wisconsin has 12 electoral votes. We might lose it. Joe McCarthy is a homegrown hero. You don't want to take him on here, and so forth. They go on and argue with, and Eisenhower said, are you telling me to take that paragraph out? They said, yes. Eisenhower said, take it out. So he never delivered it, despite how he felt. And that was one of those moments that would have made a huge, huge difference. And it might have ended McCarthy right then. Or, as I suggest in the book, had he later on made a speech to the country taking on McCarthy, as Ed Morrow did at the toward the end of the McCarthy era. But he wouldn't do that.
You talk about this as the age of anxiety. The title you've given to the book, as you look at McCarthyism to terrorism, again, that moment. I keep thinking, what happened to America? Well, many moments accrete.
Yes.
And individuals do matter. It isn't just because he was president. It was because at that moment, he failed us.
That's right. He did. And I have to go back. This is very personal because I have a whole different view of Eisenhower, and I feel more tragic about this event. I interviewed for this book one person that I admired enormously, who worked for Ike in the White House and his chief of staff and military advisor and General Goodpaster. He died just before I finished the book at the age of 90. He was a magnificent. He worked for Marshall and Eisenhower, worshipped them both. And he told me again and again how Ike would talk about in the White House to him about this guy McCarthy. And Eisenhower had a furious temper, too. And he said his face would flush and go red right up to the roots of his hair when he talked about McCarthy. But he wouldn't take him on.
There is something about do the right thing.
Not to let the Democrats off. You also have Lyndon Johnson, who by all accounts is as capable a Senate leader, majority leader, as has been around and certainly in our
the strongest ever, I would say, yes.
Who also chose to do nothing. And either one of them, it would seem, could have done something. They both could see it, and they could have put a
stop
to it.
That was exactly the real tragedy of McCarthyism, which continues to this day. If the political process and the press and the leaders don't say, we have to stand up. We are elected to be counted, to stand for something. And Lyndon Johnson refrained over and over and over again. He was urged by people that all the time, take on this guy McCarthy, put the Democratic Party to end McCarthy. And he'd say, that's the Republican Party problem. And if I do that, he'll just become stronger. So this is not the time to do it. 3 years went by when Lyndon Johnson didn't act. And it's the same period in which Eisenhower. So out of that comes this terrifying destructiveness of McCarthyism, which is character assassination, smear, fear, using attacks on people to divide us. That's what McCarthyism is and was.
I went back, by virtue of having read The Age of Anxiety, we were also going to do a program with E.L. Doctorow.
Yes.
And I set myself aside a couple of days, and I read that which I had not really been able to have the courage to read, which is the Book of Daniel, in which E.L. Doctorow, his purpose was to show how you got from the old left to the new left.
Right.
And what it is a story of McCarthyism and makes it really personal. So these things about which you speak are not just sort of unfortunate things that happen in government.
No, no.
This destroyed lives. This shaped our country. This corrupted our political soul in many ways.
Let me tell you a story that people say now that McCarthyism was exaggerated, it wasn't a danger, there wasn't a fear. That's people like you, Haynes Johnson, you liberal, you com-simp, whatever you are. That's all right. But they can't possibly understand what it was like then. People were terrorized. They were afraid to buy books. They were afraid to sign petitions. They were forced to give loyalty oaths when they had nothing at all.
Librarians were sneaking around looking at people.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was a real, and thousands of people lost their jobs. I mean, through character assassinations and attacks. That's real. And the conformity that settled on the country that we now look back to the 50s, that was McCarthy. People on college campuses were afraid to take a stand on issues of the time. This is across the United States. And I think that, to me, the best example of what McCarthyism was, how strong it was. I did my graduate work at the University of Wisconsin in Madison in American history after I came out of the Army for 3 years during the Korean War. And it was, that point, the most liberal place in the country. It was the Berkeley of its time.
Right.
And it really was. And on the 4th of July in 1952, when Joe McCarthy was just reaching the apogee of his strength and fear and about to re-elect senators and defeat Democrats and give the control of the Congress back to the Republicans, on the 4th of July in Madison, Wisconsin, a surveyor went out and interviewed 112 citizens of Madison, Wisconsin, and simply said, I want to read you statements and see if you'll support them and sign a petition. And they went to 112 people. All of the quotations were from two sources, the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights. 111 of 112 people in Madison, Wisconsin, on the 4th of July in 1952, wouldn't sign that because they were afraid they'd be attacked as being subversive or communist. That was in Madison, Wisconsin. That's how fearful the period was.
You say it's not as bad now, or you say that you're not saying it's as bad now as it was then. In some ways, it seems to me worse. There are people in prison who we don't even know are there, and that didn't happen very often. We had a senator that was clearly running amok, and he was not being held accountable for anything by politicians, by the press, by anyone. Some of that now has moved into an administration.
Yes.
And the resources available to an administration are much broader and reach much further than what the Senate as a whole and certainly one senator can manage. And in some ways, I think the dangers are, in fact, worse, building on what happened 50 years ago.
Yeah, Bill, I actually agree with what you just said, and I hope I don't give the impression in the book that I don't think there are problems today. There are tremendous problems, and many of them are much worse than happened during the McCarthy era, and the abuses on people who were swept up after 9/11. No charges. They were held sometimes for a year and a half, month after month, no charges, no lawyers, no families didn't know where they were. I mean, these were citizens. What's happened in the torture that we now know about, and not just the torture at Abu Ghraib in Iraq or Guantanamo Bay or whatever, but there were incidents in our own prisons at home here. And this, I cite, as you may recall in the book, this incredible documentation that the Justice Department's Office of Internal Investigations.
This is Ashcroft's Justice Department.
Yes, and they did a huge Inspector General investigation, what happened after the 9/11 attacks. And it's a damning indictment. I think the country knows nothing about it because it was released literally as we were invading Iraq. And so the whole climate, it never focused on this. And I still find, I get frankly furious, the idea where there's nobody still held accountable for the abuses of the prison tortures.
Well, and
if this isn't what America is, what is it? What are our standards?
Our current attorney general tells the president that, the Geneva Convention doesn't apply to us.
Well, it's old-fashioned sort of archaic, and we really don't need that.
Yet we're not in the streets, and we don't have that new form of protest. And what has happened to the American character that we are just sitting back? What happened to standing up for the... Where's Thomas Paine when we need him?
Well, if you can find him, will you tell him to call me? I'll stand up
with
him.
Well, and in some ways, the answer to that seems to me to be, Tom Paine isn't available, it's up to all of us.
Yes, that's exactly what I hope the book is about. That you can't rely on the great godlike figure who's the leader. Politics and events change from the bottom up. Martin Luther King was the greatest figure I ever saw and knew, and I knew him actually better than any, I think, white reporter. I was with him and so forth, all over the South and all that, and I admired him and all. But he didn't create the civil rights movement. It was 100 years after slavery and so forth. It took 100 years to build. The women's rights movement didn't start just in the 1850s. It takes time to develop. And then a leader has to emerge to speak, and as King did, to touch the conscience of the country. That's what you need, an authentic voice. And we don't, I'm not saying we're not going to have that. That's what we're looking for, or I am at least.
This is Haynes Johnson, who is looking for it, as are many of us. Join us when we return with more of The Paula Gordon Show.